This is the Rich Duncan Construction Newsmakers at Noon with Denise and Hunter. Presented by Hagen Hamilton Insurance. Live local talk that matters to you. Now, here are Denise and Hunter, exclusively on 1430 KYKN. Salem is listening.
Welcome, everybody, to this Wednesday edition of Newsmakers at Noon. I am Denise Quinn.
And this is Hunter Newton.
And I have a feeling we're going to have a little bit of a spicy show today, Hunter.
It's going to be exciting and spicy and fun. And I think we've got it all wrapped into one today.
I think we do. I was a little, there were some text messages flying and chatting going on last night. There's some issues happening in Salem that, I have some things to say. I have opinions.
That's right.
So a little bit later in the show, we're going to talk to a local restaurateur and very good friend of the station, Mike Adams. And we're just going to chat.
Mm-hmm. See what's going on in the world.
See what's going on. But before we get started with that, we want to welcome to the show Jerry Kroom, who is here to tell us all about the Brooks Truck Show, the 32nd annual Brooks Truck Show. Jerry, it is great to have you.
Thank you.
So, 32nd annual truck show. This thing is a big deal. It's happening at Powerland Heritage Park, which before we went on air, I was telling you I have some friends that moved to Idaho. They come back every year for the steam up. They love going there. And this is so popular.
Yes, it is. It seems like it's growing each year.
Yeah. So give us a little history on this one. This is the Brooks Truck Show. What kind of trucks? What's the history on it? Again, it's been going on for 32 years.
Mainly the large commercial type vehicles. Some pickups type equipment are there, but mainly the larger commercial type vehicles. Some farm trucks, et cetera, et cetera. Mm-hmm. But like I said, it's just really grown over the years. It started in 89 and... very small and just grown to what it is today. I don't know. Well, I think Powerland covers like 76 acres or something like that. And we pretty much fill up most all of that.
Yeah. So are these local people bringing their rigs in? Do they come from out of state? Where do they come from?
Pretty much all over the West Coast. It started out as pretty much Northwest trucks, and it's just grown to the point we have people come from all parts of California, as far south as San Diego. We've got one of our members, lives in Quincy, Illinois, and he even brought one of his trucks out this year. But it just grows each year. We get Canadian trucks down here, Idaho, Wyoming, just all over the West Coast.
Wow. So is it a competition or just an exhibition?
No, it is non-competitive. One of our sponsors, Schatz Chrome, does a People's Choice Award, and they run that themselves. But no, it's non-competitive as far as our end of it.
And so what do the people typically choose? is it something super flashy?
Chrome helps.
Chrome, a lot of chrome.
Yeah, okay. A lot of chrome, a lot of polish helps.
We do like bright, shiny things, don't we?
Oh, yes. Yeah, bigger toys for bigger boys.
Exactly. And I have a lot of friends that are, I don't know what you call them, gearheads. They're just car guys and some car gals, but mostly it's the guys, and they just eat this stuff up.
Oh, yes.
So are we expecting everything from some vintage big rigs all the way to kind of the most modern and, you know, maybe even some of these electric ones that
the
they're
Tesla,
starting to use now?
Cybertruck?
Oh, yeah. Yes. Our museum, we've got about 75 trucks that live in the museum year-round. And we have a mutual agreement with Jubitz Truck Stop in Portland, and they give us some space up there, and we rotate some of our trucks in and out of there a couple of times a year, just for the drivers, you know, that haven't got anything to do, you know, go on or through kick tire or whatever. And then we've got several that are off-site storage type thing, but right now we're stuffed. But, yeah, we've got everything from a 1899 horse-drawn wagon.
Cool.
Up to the newest one we've got is a 2017. It was a prototype that Freightliner built. It was an electric truck, total electric truck. Took them 5 years to design it and get it running. They tested it over a period of time. It did what it was supposed to do. Mm-hmm. It was never designed to go into production. They just wanted to see if they could do it. And I asked what it cost one time. He said, "Don't ask."
But, oh, really?
Anyway, they've donated. It lives in our museum. We had to unhook the batteries to bring it in to keep the fire insurance people happy. But
now we
just kind of pull it around or push it or whatever. It'll never go on the road again, but it's a brand new truck, just sits there. So we've got something from, like I say, 1899 all the way up to 2017.
Wow.
120, almost 120 years worth of trucks.
Oh, yeah. We've got almost 20 that are at least 100 years old. And several one-off prototypes. We've got two Kenworths that are prototypes, never before they went into production, and they live in our museum. And we have a very good relationship with all the major truck manufacturers.
Wow. How fascinating is that? The electric one probably was so, because those batteries are heavy.
Oh, yes.
I can't imagine it being practical on the road. I just can't.
It was, like I said, the first generation. Basically what they did is they took since Daimler owns Freightliner, a German company, they took a German electric bus for the chassis, and then they put an American cab on it and melded it together. And then they tested it for over 1,000 miles. It did what it was supposed to do. Mm-hmm. I've driven it. It's just like driving a big electric golf cart. No noise.
Yeah, that's hard to get used
but
to.
But it's impractical. It was never designed to, like I said, to go into production. But now they're up to Gen 3, Gen 4 type thing. And they're practical for in-town service. The biggest thing is battery life.
Yeah.
You know, the heavier the load, the weather, et cetera, et cetera. How many times you gouge on it away from the stop sign all affects the battery.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. Interesting. So are people going to need tickets to get into this? Give us some details on the nuts and bolts.
Yes. We charge the public that comes in on Friday and Saturday. We charge $15 a day. And there's something there for everybody. Besides the truck show, all the there's 14 separate museums on the grounds, and most of them will also be open. So you can, if a truck show is not something you could do, maybe you want to go over to John Deere, or maybe you want to go over to the Caterpillar Museum. So something there for everybody.
I like it. I like it.
Okay, and so what time are the doors opening on Friday?
I think the last I had heard will be 10 o'clock in the morning. And what's unique about Friday night, at dusk, we have what they call a night glow. And That's where all the trucks turn their lights on. And it's really impressive. It's out in the backfield all over. And it's really caught on. It gets bigger each year. And then that would be, you know, up till like 10 o'clock at night on Friday. And then Saturday, 8 to 5.
Okay. I would love to see an aerial shot. Get a drone up there for that night.
Yeah.
That would be
We had one a couple of years ago when Kenworth was there, mm-hmm. and it is absolutely fantastic to see all those trucks with their lights on.
That would be too much fun.
Do you guys have a social media presence where if you got videos like that, you share them out there?
There's people that take them that we've always asked for copies of it, but we never get the darn thing.
Oh, then they need to tag you if they get a really good drone video.
Oh, yes, yes, definitely.
Yeah, because I'd love to see that, too. That would be amazing. You guys have a website, Jerry?
Yes, we do. Let's see. It's www.PacificNorthwestTruckMuseum.org, I believe.
Okay. Off the top of your head, that's pretty good.
Well, good guess.
Well, and you could probably go to the Powerland Heritage website and get a little more information as well, I'm assuming.
And it's going to be a nice hot summer weekend, so I'm anticipating you're going to probably have packed houses both all the days.
Yeah. We generally, I would say the gate normally is probably 4,000 to 5,000 over the 2-day period. So, I mean, there's a lot. And as far as trucks go, generally 350 to 400. 2 years ago, Kenworth's 100th birthday was celebrated, and we had 446. So we cover a lot of ground.
Okay.
So just at a, go ahead.
I was going to say, so Jerry, is there a favorite truck out there of yours?
Mm-hmm. Oh, I was an owner-operator for 30-some years, and I basically went with Freightliner because they would build it the way mm-hmm. I wanted it. I always thought Kenworth finished the truck better than Freightliner, but it's probably Freightliner.
Freightliner. All right. So there it is. You heard it from Jerry.
Because I just real quick, too, before we let you go, though, I've always been curious about, because you're long haul and you're sleeping in those things. Have they come a long way in the accommodations for the driver so that it's kind of nice in there? A little microwave, a little TV.
Yeah. All the creatures. Unless, you know, some of the guys might get those special rigs that have a shower and stuff. But most of them don't have mm-hmm. everything but a shower. But yeah, yeah. Your TV, refrigerators, cool. work areas, just about anything you want to put on one.
I like kind of like a big camper, but yeah. Mm-hmm. So would you be allowed, you could peek inside and take a look? I've always been curious about it.
Yeah.
Okay. Very cool. Well, Jerry, again, this 32nd annual Brooks Truck Show at Powerland Heritage Park, August 22nd and 23rd. Thanks for coming in, Jerry. It's going to be a great event.
Can I add one more short
thing? Absolutely. Yes.
Each year we pick a charity, and our charity of choice is Liberty House here in Salem.
Oh, perfect.
And they take care of little kids and stuff.
Yes.
And one of our members that passed away a couple of years ago, what he would do is during Christmas or just after Christmas, he would go around and he'd find teddy bears and that mm-hmm. type of thing, and he would gather them up and take them to like Randall's Children's Hospital and in Portland and all this other stuff. Well, anyway, this last year, in honor of Frank, we adopted Bring a Bear donation for the people that come
nice.
In. Last year, we collected 203 teddy bears, and we divided them up between the different care facilities, and we've asked kids getting people again this year to bring a bear.
I love it. Oh, good. I'm glad we got that in. Yeah. Absolutely wonderful. Mm-hmm. Again, Jerry Kroom with the 32nd Annual Brooks Truck Show. Bring a bear. Go, go. This is going to be a great event. That's it for us on that, Jerry. We're going to take a break. You're listening to Newsmakers at Noon on 1430 KYKN.
Now back to the Rich Duncan Construction Newsmakers at Noon with Denison Hunter, presented by Hagen Hamilton Insurance on 1430 KYKN. Salem is listening.
This segment of Newsmakers at Noon is brought to you by Green Acres Landscape and GA at Home.
At Newton.
Newsmakers at Newton? Yeah, well.
In like your big? Own name.
I guess that's what it is, you know.
Oh, welcome back, everybody. All right. In the third chair with us today, none other than Salem restaurateur. We all know him. We all love him. Mike Adams. So, first of all, it's great to have you. It's been too long.
It's been a long time. I was thinking about it, I don't know, a week or two ago. But I've taken on different roles, and I don't have a lot of free time.
You got three venues that are hopping busy.
Yeah, three different restaurant names, I guess. And, you know, one of them's got three of its own. And then I've recently taken on the care of my 87-year-old mother. So that's my biggest job right now. Yeah, she's got, you know, a little memory issues, and she had a stroke a few months ago. Aww. So we're having fun. I mean, I you know, taking care of your mom is some experience that
Well, what a blessing that you're able to do that. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I agree. But what a blessing for her that she can be with you and your wonderful family. So, the reason something hit the papers yesterday. Salem Reporter had a piece about the headline. I don't have it in front of me. About an ethics thing when you were chair of the Marion County Fair Board.
Yeah, it was. That was an interesting thing. I don't know how you want me to start, but I'm going to start. So it was probably 3.5 years ago, maybe.
Yeah, 2022.
Maybe. It says 22. What are we in now? 25. So that was
25.
So I actually
remember when you were on the board.
Yeah,
I've gone to lots of events and things when you were on the board.
Yeah, and so someone. Wrote a complaint using someone else's identification so that that first someone wouldn't be identified.
Okay.
And it stated things like, I've brought up complaints at the board meetings. I've, you know, as if they were first person at the board meetings.
Mm-hmm.
And the name on the complaint didn't register. I'm like, I have no idea who this woman is. And so I started asking around, and happened to be somebody everybody knew that had never attended a board meeting. Yet they're making a complaint to the Ethics Commission as if they were at a board meeting.
That sounds a little unethical.
I would think. And so, anyways, I didn't know about this for, let's see, the complaint was made in like April or May of, I thought it must have been 22 or 20, 21 or something. It was quite a while ago.
Yeah.
And I didn't find out until November of that year. And I'm driving in my truck, and an email pops up on my phone, and it says, Ethics Commission, please respond. And I click on it, and I had to pull over when I started reading it because I was floored that,
really? Yeah.
that I violated some ethics or something. And it reads the, it read the complaint that this person had, you know, and I'm like, I have no idea. So I immediately call the number. And the ethics investigator gal was very short with me. She had made her decision up. It was like,
oh boy,
you did this, you did that. You, and I'm like, whoa, wait a minute. Do I get a chance to explain myself or rebut the comments? I said, what, how does this work? She goes, oh no, we tried to get a hold of you back in April. And I said, at that point, I start scrolling and punching in her email address.
Yeah.
And trying to find an email from April.
Mm-hmm.
Nothing.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I'm not a tech guy, but I know how to do that.
Didn't try very hard to reach you in April.
And I said to her, you never sent me an email. I said, I have no record of any emails back in April, from April to now. And she said, well, they went to a wrong email address. And I said, whoa. So how
that's
much time?
That's not your problem.
Yeah, and this is going in 5 days. This is going to a decision. They've already made their mind up because they didn't have, they pulled up records, all Marion County Fair, any Marion County organization records everything. So there's recorded and there's, you know, written
minutes.
And, you know, we've been part of other organizations.
And
so I said, well, you know, they were pulling records and of course the Marion County can't tell me somebody's investigating. So, you know, the gal that's in charge of that part of the fair, she's, you know, she feels really bad, you know, once I approach and say, did you know this was happening? You know, blah, blah. So anyways, I show up at this meeting. I got their outline of what they're accusing me of. Mm-hmm. And I show up this meeting with a probably 5-page statement.
Okay.
Rebutting and explaining every single thing down to the detail of what went on in that meeting. And so I start to go, and they're like, oh, well, no, you don't have an opportunity to speak at this hearing. I'm like, I don't feel that's fair. I said, I just found out about this fair hearing 5 days ago.
Yeah.
And I said, please just let me go through a few of these points because it's very important. I think you're misled on this. And so I went through points and then they all look at each other and they're like, I think we need to shelf this and come back to it and do a little more investigation.
Okay.
One, according to someone in the legal field, he told me, I said, do I need to hire you? And he said, no. He said, but you just tell them that this should have never gone to an investigation because the person making the complaint wasn't vetted. And it's clear that this person is lying about being at meetings. And because you can pull that record up. Everybody has to be on record when you go
record,
to.
I
ran the meetings, you know, so I would, you know, is there any public comment? Is there anybody here, you know, whether on Zoom or in person or, you know, telephone or whatever. And so that's where I was stuck. They cut me off after a couple pages because I see that, you know me, you know, I can get detailed.
Verbose.
And they said, okay, we're gonna dig deeper into it, blah, blah, blah. So there was a lot more things they were going to try and throw at me. And then it disappeared. And I happened to have a associate that's on the commission. And I asked him, I said, what's happened? I haven't heard anything. Well, then a month ago, I get a phone call. He said, well, after 6 months, it just goes off the record because they never did anything about it.
Oh, and it was longer than 6 months.
Oh,
then.
Yeah, a couple of years.
Yeah.
And so month or so ago, I get a call from a new investigator. And I said, look, I said, this is old news. I said, you know, after 6 months, it's supposed to go, oh, no. That's if we didn't start the investigation. And I'm like, so you are bringing back this investigation? Do I get to explain myself at this point? No. So that's where they came up with these things. And they don't use complete statements. They don't look at the entire context of the conversations that took place. So How much time do we have?
We got less than a couple of minutes, but I'm kind of like, okay, so virtually an anonymous person using a fake name creates a complaint against
you. They weren't anonymous, but no. I can't get into that.
Okay, but anyway, so then they do an investigation. They say they reached out to you, but they never actually did from their own mistakes.
Yeah.
Then they say, well, we don't want your opinion. We don't care about your opinion.
Yeah.
When you kind of force them to listen to it, they shelve the issue for years.
Yeah, yeah.
And then bring in someone new to investigate. I'm kind of going, that all sounds very unethical to me.
Right? So the new person comes in and he's taken over for the gal that retired. Mm-hmm. And she, I think I finally touched her heart, and that's why she was trying to bury it. Because she knew that I was not intentionally doing any of the stuff that they're trying to say. So that's where we are right now. And then,
okay,
yeah.
And then the Salem Reporter decided that was newsworthy.
Yeah, yeah. Well, it had my name on it.
Yeah.
So I mean, and everybody knows in this town, the left goes crazy when they hear my name.
Yes, they do.
And you've read the comments.
Oh my gosh!
But you know what's funny?
Bottom feeder community.
It's exploding the opposite direction.
It is
right now.
It is.
Mm-hmm. You know, people are sick and tired of the liberal. You know, I didn't wear a mask during COVID.
Oh, my.
I heard
neither
rumors.
Neither did I, Mike.
Oh,
my neither God. Did I.
I heard
did
rumors
I.
of yeah. that.
You know, I never kick anybody out of my restaurant unless they're being disruptive.
What?
Oh, of all creeds.
We have more to talk about. We're going to take a break for the bottom of the hour news, and we'll bring back Mike on the other side. Come on back.
The Rich Duncan Construction Newsmakers at Noon, presented by Hagen Hamilton Insurance, continues. Here are Denise and Hunter on 1430 KYKN. Salem is listening.
This segment of Newsmakers at Noon is brought to you by Home Comfort and Color Tile of Salem.
Alrighty, welcome back, everybody. We're talking today with Mike Adams, Adams Rib Smokehouse, Bowman Vine, Cozy's New York Style Deli, my favorite. So, it always seems like you're right. You said your name's attached to something, and it kind of just always blows up. There's a faction of people in this town that just, you know,
they just hate me. You know,
they lift up the little rock and they come crawling out. And they get behind their keyboards and they spew their bile. Makes them feel better, I guess. Whatever.
Yeah. Yeah, my wife and I were talking about it. It's like, we're not special. What's the attraction? Why are they so infatuated with us? It makes no sense to me.
I mean, maybe makes it's no sense. Jealous of running three different successful restaurant chains. I mean, was that what it is?
I don't know. I mean, I think it's, you know, I volunteer for a lot of different things. Mm-hmm. I can't tell you how many thousands of dollars, and I'm not bragging, but you see a need,
right.
You know, and I'm a food guy, so I can get food at cheaper costs and I can donate that back to the community
and help organizations. I think the community sees that. And again, these bottom feeders, they come out and they're very nasty and they're negative and they don't have anything to contribute. They don't volunteer. And I like what I'm seeing because I was watching that thread. I was watching it all night last night and I saw a shift. And it's a very small minority of loudmouths.
Oh, yeah.
Who just sit
like
there and
five
bang away
people.
On their keyboards. Yeah. It's like five people. And what I saw was the rest of the community who knows the good works that you and Katrina do out in the community and that your family does out in the community really rise up and come to your defense. And I thought that was lovely. That's Salem at its finest.
Yeah.
And I think that, and I think we're seeing more of that. I think people are sick of these keyboard jerks who bring nothing to the table. They're takers, destroyers. They don't add anything. They're just this negative, toxic force. People are really just done with it.
I would hope so. Somebody posted on one of those threads that they tried and tried and went to several different businesses for sponsorship for their child's softball or baseball.
Yeah.
And Bowen Vine was the only one that stepped up.
Yeah.
And I couldn't tell if that was a good comment or if they were upset because now they can't go to Bowen Vine. I don't know, but that just shows you what we do. And I don't operate. I don't run Bowen Vine. That's run by my son and a couple other guys, and they work hard at what they do.
Yeah.
And yes, my son was raised by me. he has the same heart as I do, and a heart for the people. You know, when I first started being involved with Marion County Fair, it was, you know, maybe 20 years ago, and I would donate money, and then I donated a banquet for the startup of the fair every year for the first probably 4 or 5 years. And then they asked me, why don't you put a booth in? Really? Is it that big of a deal? I'm used to doing really big events. Is that, you know, I'm like, okay, we're not doing anything that weekend. Well, yeah, well, let's put a booth in. So, and that was probably 15 years ago. So for several years, you know, 10 years or so before I was even on the board, I had a booth at the fair. And I have a lot of connections in catering and businesses, and businesses would have a picnic at the fair and they'd ask them, who do you want to cater? They would say Adam's Rib. So I did a lot of catering at the fair. And there's a lot of money. There was other people that did catering too. I'm not the only guy. Once I got on the board and saw what the distress that the fair was in, I mean, it was it was running in the red all the time. And how I could help and come up with more ideas for revenue. One of the things was, and they call me out in this, in the ethics, that I was trying to profit off of it. One of the things was I mentioned, well, what if caterers paid a 10% fee? Because there's some catering jobs where you'll bring in 10 grand for one company. And if that caterer paid a 10% fee, 10% of that catering would go back to the fair. And they say I was trying to profit, because in the paperwork it says that I voted on raising prices for catering at the fair. I voted on charging the caterer 10% of their profit.
Well, that's not how it came across. 10%
of their gross. Exactly. Yeah. It was totally miswritten. And I wish I would have seen it before I signed that agreement to make it go away. Because I was just done with it. But that was so that we could get more revenue. And the other thing was a food truck. You know, I own food trucks. I could have said, hey, let's put my food truck in the fair. But I didn't. I said, you know, most food trucks can't handle volume. We want people. We don't want people standing in line for 20 minutes for a corn dog. Nobody likes that. I mean, it's okay at these food pods and everything. I support all of them. But at a fair, you want to get in and get out. And so I said, what if we look at more vendors like Golden Grill Concessions or Adam's Rib? They can handle the crowds. Both of us were already in there. Golden Grill and Adam's Rib have been in the fair for years. I said, look for more of those type of vendors. Not, I want to be in the fair because I can handle it and nobody else can. No, look for the volume vendors. And apparently that was wrong, because now I'm trying to promote myself again. I'm like, that had nothing to do with it. It had to do with finding the right vendors that can handle the crowds at the fair. So after a couple of years, the fair went from being in the red to being in the black. Now, I don't know how, I haven't been there for 3 years, so I don't know how it's doing now. I'm assuming it's still doing good, because the fair coordinators haven't changed and they're amazing people. But that's what bringing on a food guy, so that, you know, you think of, okay, what are those aspects of that part of the business? And I've been in events my entire food career for almost 30 years. I've been doing this. So, you know, shame on me for not recusing myself when discussing why I was brought on to the fair board to start with.
Well, I want to go to this one. So you haven't been on the fair board since 2022. So we're 3 years in. You're still at the Marion County Fair. And they're still taking 10% of the money you make, because that was your idea.
As a caterer, when I do a large catering, and I have companies that every year request me. They want my catering. And these are companies I've dealt with outside of the fair. I do catering for them year-round on different events. And so they say, well, we want Adam's Rib to do it. Now, they have the option. They can have any food vendor. And this is another thing that we put into place. You can choose from any food vendor at the fair first. So if you want to have corn dogs at your event, you can have the corn dog vendor cater your event. They have to pay 10% on that, which is less than they have to pay if they're a food vendor. Mm-hmm. A food vendor pays, I think, 22%. And so they're still paying that fee, and that brings in more revenue. Like if you do a $10,000 catering at the fair, you're paying $1,000 back mm-hmm. to the fair.
So I want to kind of not shift gears, but I want to talk about volunteerism, because what this seems to be, it felt like it was kind of a tax, maybe a strong word, but it was really kind of taking on small business owners and people who are in the community and they want to volunteer their time. Now, like you said, we've all been on boards. I've been on many boards. I've run meetings. I've directed meetings. The meeting, you've got to follow all that. Most people are not really up on that. They couldn't cite chapter and verse, you know, what the statute is and how you have to do this. So I'm hoping that out of this, that the county then for volunteer boards really trains these folks. I mean, we saw what happened recently with the city of Salem with serial meetings. Yeah. If you don't know, you don't know.
You don't
it's not
know.
Malicious. It's not willful. You just don't know. To me, this was a mistake. It sounds like you admitted that, and it was a learning experience. I think it was a quote in the article. Really, that should have been the end of it. To me, this is not necessarily newsworthy, and it certainly didn't warrant the venom explosion out on social media.
No.
But that's another issue.
But that's me.
But again, this could have a chilling effect on people really wanting to volunteer. People already don't want to step up and run for office because of the crap you get doing it.
Well, exactly.
I'm really disappointed.
You're hot.
I'm just disappointed that that they chose to take this tack on it. It's frustrating.
Yeah, it is. It is totally frustrating. After this came out, now, once it came out, I didn't say anything to the other board member. Well, I asked a few other board members, you know, that I was close to, and they knew about it. There was probably mm-hmm. three of the board members that knew about it. And then I met with the commissioners mm-hmm. because ultimately the commissioners are in charge of everything.
Right.
And I requested legal to be at every meeting mm-hmm. because I'm just a greenhorn. I mean, yeah, I've run several boards before, but, you know, some things slip through the cracks when you're sure. brought on to a group for your expertise in a certain field and then you can't work on that certain field. It's like, well, what am I doing here? Mm-hmm. You know, and I did it because, one, I love to support 4-H and FFA. My grandkids are all doing that.
Oh, yeah.
And they're amazing, those programs. I mean, I think every child should be required to go into those programs.
Yeah, they're great.
You know, but that's another story. But when I did that, all three of the commissioners, you know, they said, okay, well, we'll have legal, and you know, they were on my side. They mm-hmm. they felt bad for me, and mm-hmm. you know, there's not a whole lot they can do. You know, they were all called by the Ethics Commission and questioned, and they all said, you know, they had my back. I mean, as well as the board members that I talked to about it said, no, well, that's nonsense. You know, tell them to call me, you know. So it was quite a learning experience. Mm-hmm. If I was to do it again, I probably wouldn't. Mm-hmm. And I think what you're getting at is they're trying to get rid of volunteers. They want mm-hmm. everything run by the government. They want, you know, but you need those volunteers. They're the ones that do the hard work.
And they have the heart for the community.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And it's, so I don't know. I don't know what the answer is.
Well, that's what I get out of it. I sit here and go, you just said it yourself. If they asked you to come back and, you know, for the same purposes, it's like, no, thank you.
Well, when I resigned, they actually did ask me if I wanted to come back, and I, you know, there were some changes made, and they said, you know, you're welcome to come back anytime. And, you know, maybe when I retire, that's never going to happen, but, you know.
you retire?
Yeah, but that's what I see with this. It's like, it's discouraging people, and Salem already struggles with getting volunteers for enough things.
Yeah.
And then, you know, so many people love to complain about, you know, these organizations and different things run by volunteers. And it's like, well, then get more involved. But
yet step up.
It's reasons like this why people don't.
Yeah, it totally is. I mean, I was just floored that it would get to this point. And I'm really disappointed in the Ethics Commission. I mean, that's one guy, I can't remember, Mike Ryan. He made a big post. He said they need to abolish it because he has experience, you know, with that as well. And and it's almost like, and they're all volunteers as well.
Yeah,
you know, the volunteers,
City Council, school board, and, they're volunteers.
But you're putting, I don't know if you say, you know, inexperienced or, you know, everybody's inexperienced, but that one especially. That's overseeing the ethics of every organization in the state.
Yeah.
You know, you'd think there would be a little better ethics when it comes to trying to get a hold of the person you're investigating.
Yes.
And, well, and then giving them a chance to speak for themselves.
They ultimately did find your correct email. So.
Well, right?
And I also sit there and I go, and a look into people making accusations against other people because that
vet the complaint complaint. I'm not saying that there's not valid complaints out there by real people, but I'm not even sure this person knew that they made the complaint.
That would be an interesting interview for the Ethics Commission to go and interview that person.
I don't think I haven't thought of it, but you know, I don't even want to drag that part of the conversation in. You know, that's they're done in my life. I don't ever have to see the person who did this again, and that's fine. I mean, I don't hate them. I just feel bad and sorry for them.
Yeah.
You know, living a pitiful life where they feel they have to attack another individual, just like some of those haters on the Facebook threads. You know?
It's miserable. It's like, well, you got to wake up and be you. So enjoy your misery. I guess it's just like, okay, because you know, like we said, most people really are just, they're not buying it anymore. And it doesn't work really anymore. That tactic of spewing and name calling and trying to be as snarky as you can. It's like, okay.
Yeah. It really makes no sense to waste your time and energy to, you know, cause a problem like that. And I've never been that way. I mean, one guy said he's read posts or comments I've made on threads, and I'm like, I don't make comments on threads.
No, not at all.
I don't do it.
Well, and then you sit there and you go, what is this, the accuser's end game in this? Is it to get you a massive fine? Is it to get you to have to, you know, take an educational course? Is it to get you blackballed from volunteering? I mean,
what are you going to do? You can't volunteer anywhere anymore. It's like,
is it to ruin your reputation? Because clearly, again, when watching that thread and the shift in it, it was like, nope, because people were coming out of the woodwork to defend you. We're running a little long. You want to just stick around to the end of the show, Mike?
Why not? It's only another 10 minutes.
Okay, we're going to take our last break. You're listening to Newsmakers at Noon on 1430 KYKN.
Now back to the Rich Duncan Construction Newsmakers at Noon with Denise and Hunter, presented by Hagen Hamilton Insurance on 1430 KYKN. Salem is listening.
This segment of Newsmakers at Noon is brought to you by the Perlin Mill and Adams Ribs Smokehouse, which I should add, we have some gift cards available on halfpriceoregon.com for Adams Rib and Cozy's New York Deli and Bowen Vine Burger.
How to choose? Get all three.
A lot of people do.
I love all three of them. I love them all. So anyway, we're wrapping up. We're talking with Mike Adams today. So, you know, just being in business in general, just talking about how this is disappointing. It seems like it's just it's a smear. It's an attack on small business owners and volunteers. Did you see the statement from the CEO of Bed Bath & Beyond about why they're leaving California? It is blistering.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I haven't seen it.
We should probably read it. I'll go ahead and read it real quick.
It's a statement from Marcus Lemonis, executive chair. He says, "We will not open or operate retail stores in California. This decision isn't about politics. It's about reality. California has created one of the most overregulated, expensive, and risky environments for businesses in America. It's a system that makes it harder to employ people, harder to keep the doors open, and harder to deliver value to customers. The result? Higher taxes, higher fees, higher wages that many businesses simply cannot sustain, and endless regulations that strangle growth. Even when the state announces a budget surplus, it's built on the backs of ordinary citizens who are paying too much and businesses who are squeezed until they break. At Bed Bath & Beyond, our responsibility is to our customers and our shareholders. We will not participate in a system that undermines both. Instead, we are investing in a California strategy that works. 24 to 48 hour delivery, and in many cases, same day service, Californians will continue to get the products they love through bedbathandbeyond.com, but without the inflated cost created by an unsustainable model. We're taking a stand because it's time for common sense. Businesses deserve a chance to succeed, employees deserve jobs that last, and customers deserve fair prices. California's system delivers the opposite. That's what Bed Bath & Beyond will serve California customers. That's why they will serve them directly through bedbathandbeyond.com on our terms with their best interests at heart. Bravo, bravo, bravo.
And this is such a trend we are seeing in, yep, in these, you know, extreme blue states. Businesses packing and leaving because of the, yep, regulation, the taxes makes unsustainable. And you, Mike, as a small business owner here in the great blue state of Oregon.
No, it is. Yeah, it is scary how much we pay in taxes. It's, yeah, you know, our payroll, tax on our goods, the whole thing, or not our goods, but our profit. It is insane how much we have to pay. And now they're wanting, Chariots wants to come in and throw another tax in there for payroll.
I saw that the city of Kaiser voted to oppose that.
Well, hopefully Salem does as well.
Yeah.
But they don't have really any say in it because Chariots has already been allowed the right to do it, you know, and that, you know, well, good or bad, thinking back, you know, in hindsight, you know, Salem Chamber of Commerce putting full backing with conditions on it, thinking that Chariots would be honest in the conditions when they weren't, and they have no business people as advisors or anything on there.
We can potentially add with this special session coming up at the end of the month, if they institute this gas tax
another
and regulations,
tax. Yeah,
that affects you because things are brought to you via vehicles.
Oh, yeah. It's crazy. I was talking to a guy yesterday as a produce distributor, and he says, we try to keep it, you know, low, but it's $5 per case. Okay. Tacked on to whatever they pay. It's going to be $5 a case. Now, if the gas tax goes into effect, it's going to be another, you know, so many cents onto that. And it just keeps adding up and adding up. Back in the day when I started this business, you know, almost 30 years ago, we didn't pay delivery fees. And then as the taxing and the, you know, the gas tax and everything comes up, all of a sudden we're tacked on a delivery fee to every order. And, you know, and it just keeps getting bigger and bigger and bigger. So, no, it's rough. It's rough in the state of Oregon. We're heading down the same path as California and Washington.
Yeah, it's going to be scary.
Yeah,
it's really scary. Well, we got less than a minute left with you. Anything new and exciting coming up people should be on the lookout for in places?
Pay attention to Adam's Rib Facebook page. Oh. Some changes are coming. We're going to be doing some menu revamping on Adam's Rib, and it's going to be good. It's going to be good. Everything else, you know, we're going to be at State Fair this next week and fun times. And then we always do Easy Orchard Harvest Festival. So we'll be out there and with Adam's Rib and, you know, and of course, Bowen Vines Hall, he's out and about with the food truck.
Oh, yeah.
They're going to be out at State Fair as well. We'll have lots
so
of good stuff going
there.
On. Yep.
Okay. Always my favorite. I always make a beeline for it. Well, Mike, thanks for coming in.
Yeah, absolutely.
Thanks for sharing. We appreciate you. God bless you and what you're doing out there. And stay strong. All right, everybody. That's it for us today. We'll see you tomorrow.
This has been the Rich Duncan Construction Newsmakers at Noon with Denise and Hunter, presented by Hagen Hamilton Insurance. Live local talk that matters to you. Exclusively on 1430 KYKN, where Salem is listening.